originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Sabre wins the Derby for Todd Fletcher.
Basalt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Hello again, everyone, and once again, welcome to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. This is, of course, the show trainers listen to, and we are happy to have you listening to us tonight on Sirius 219 XM Channel 201, and everyone tuning in worldwide with our live streaming on your computer or your mobile device at horseracingradio.net. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, alongside my usual entry mate here on the program. You know him as the pontiff of the pick four, Jude Feld. We are coming to you from our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios. And JT, here we go again. We have each and every week, we explore something different when it comes to getting into the profession of training racehorses. And we have heard stories of people that have given up six-figure jobs and said, you know what, I want to get up at 4 a.m. and go train racehorses for a living. We've heard others who have taken completely different routes than that and just went the traditional way of working under people and then all of a sudden got involved and have done very well. Tonight's guest, maybe one of the more unique stories that we've ever heard.
Yeah, it's a very interesting story, and he's a very cool guy, and can't wait to get to it.
Well, he was born in Belcourt, North Dakota, on the Turtle Mountain Indian Reservation. His parents were in the military, so they moved around quite a bit. He spent time himself serving our country in Korea and Afghanistan, and then took the time to work with trainer Dale Romans, and well, the rest is kind of history. He is trainer Mark Sims, who is with us tonight on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Mark, appreciate the visit. Thanks for taking the time.
Hey, guys. Really appreciate you guys taking the time out to give me some time to kind of tell the story. I'm excited.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun hour. First and foremost, before we get started, thank you very much for your service to our country. Really appreciate it, man.
Hey, I really appreciate it. Definitely a pleasure. It's an honor to be able to serve this great country, for sure.
All right, so with that being said, how does somebody that is born on an Indian reservation in North Dakota end up getting hooked on horse racing and now end up training horses for a living? Take us back to the beginning.
All right, so I better rectify that before they beat me up too much. I was actually born in El Paso, Texas.
Oh, okay.
But my mom and her whole family, really everybody except for her now, still lived on the Indian reservation up in North Dakota. She joined the military and met my dad, and we'd always go back to the reservation. My dad got deployed. We'd go back to the reservation, and then during holidays. So we always kind of consider that kind of home, for sure. But kind of how it started, my grandpa was a horse trainer, and his dad was a jockey. So my mom, growing up, and all her siblings were around horses. They'd run kind of some of the little fair meets up in North Dakota, South Dakota. Canada was a big spot. Once in a while, I'd swing over to like Canterbury if they had a good horse. And that's kind of what they did. My grandpa did it part-time where he was also a teacher at a school. And the kids just kind of jumped in. It was really a family affair. They tell stories about living in like a one-room or two-room shack. And they would they had like running water outside, and they would have to truck water up the hill to the horses in the winter. And as I'm sure you guys know, it gets super cold in North Dakota in the winter. So my mom, she would kind of cuss and when she tells me about it, but how they'd have to run up there no matter how cold it was and get that water up there to the horses, or kind of beat the ice out of the buckets to make sure the horses were taken care of. And this was all before my grandpa went to work and before they went to school. So that's kind of how it started. So every time I went back to the reservation, or I remember when I was real young, before I could even walk, my dad got deployed to Saudi Arabia, I think. So we went back to the reservation just so my mom had a little bit of support. And I couldn't walk. My grandpa tells the story, I couldn't walk when I got there. But one morning he was going to the barn, and he said I was crying to go with him. And he said, if you're going to go, you got to walk. And he said he took off. And I'm not sure how true this is, but he'll tell you. He was at the top of the barn, and he said he looked down the hill. And there I was. I take a couple steps and fall, take a couple steps and fall. So that's kind of how it started. As long as I can remember, all I've ever really wanted to do was train racehorses. I can remember, like, doing stuff like go to 7-Eleven or going to a grocery store or something as a kid and looking at people working and thinking, like, man, why are you guys working here when you could be working with horses? and really, that's how kind of how that passion or how it was instilled in me. And it's been like that for 29 years now.
That's amazing, given the fact that you weren't around horse racing that much, that it just grew in you like that, and you were able to, you know, continue that on. Because a lot of times, especially when you're younger, you know, things go by the wayside, you kind of forget about them. But the passion is running deep in you, obviously.
You know, I would I talk to my grandpa almost every day. We'd be talking horses, and like NBC, some of the bigger broadcast networks are doing a better job of kind of broadcasting and kind of showing horse racing to the public. But back then, there was only, you'd see like the Kentucky Derby, and they'd have like breakfast at the Kentucky Derby and all these. They'd have like that, and they'd have like maybe Breeders' Cup on TV. And what I would do as a kid is we had VCRs back then, believe it or not, and I would record it. And anytime I had free time, like on the weekends and stuff, I would pop those tapes in and just rewatch them. And a lot of times I would take like my pillow and I put it on the side of my parents' bed, and I had my jockey whip and I had a pair of like an old belt. And I'd give Angel Cordero and all those guys a run for their money coming down the lane.
That's great.
Did you think about being a jockey at some point, Mark?
Yeah, so I thought I was going to be a jockey till I was about 12. I actually got to like exercise some of the horses, gallop horses and stuff during the summer. So I usually spend almost every summer, and that's racing season up in North Dakota. So I'd always try to get on horses as much as I could. But I'm 6'3 and 210 pounds now, so I kind of went away at about 14 years old. but I made the quick transition over to the pony. Now I'd always take the pony out, and I can remember going back for the summers as I got older, and I'd pay for my trip to North Dakota and make quite a few bucks just ponying races and kind of going around after we finishing up, hustling up mounts. And the hardest part with that, just like training horses, is going back and hustling up your money after the races were over.
Was there one specific Kentucky Derby that you watched that you're always going to remember, and that might be the one that kind of started to get you really hooked on the game?
You know, if I think back, I can't recall one that just did it. I think the one that really, really stands out is Orb, and that's because that was my first one actually getting to be here and be around for it. And I can remember the weather just being nasty and it pouring down, but just being super excited and kind of in awe that I was actually here getting to see it after watching it my whole life. I'm sure we'll get to the Army piece of it, but I'll tell you, the Army made the mistake of bringing me to Fort Knox, Kentucky, and when I realized how close it was to Churchill, the first thing I did, like the first day being here at Churchill, was driving up to, Churchill, and I remember going out front and seeing the statue of Barbaro, and like starting to feel emotional. I didn't cry, but I remember like feeling that kind of funny feeling in your stomach, like, man, I'm actually here. I've been watching this my whole life, and here I am.
That's pretty neat. You know, my dad, when he was in World War II, was stationed at Fort Knox for a while, and the first horse race he ever went to was the Kentucky Derby. And him and his pal were off on that Saturday, and they started walking to the track, and some wealthy woman in a big fancy car stopped and said, "Are you boys going to Churchill?" And they said, "Yeah." And she said, all right, come with me. And she got him into the track and everything. She must have been an owner or something. My dad didn't know. But But that was the first horse race he ever went to, was the Kentucky Derby from Fort Knox. That's pretty cool. Was your grandfather Willie Sims? Your great-grandfather?
Mike. No, it was Mike Sims.
Mike Sims. Okay.
Mike Sims. Mike Nelson, I'm sorry.
Mike Nelson.
So my mom's maiden name is Nelson. So my grandpa's Mike Nelson. And I got uncles that train and cousins that train, Francis Nelson and Wally Dakota. They still run up in North Dakota and Canada. Kind of cool story there. We actually had a horse here with Dale that just couldn't cut it here. I mean, tried hard, but just wasn't up to par to run in Kentucky. And I tell people all the time, if you want to be like an athlete in college, you want to go play football or something somewhere, you might not be able to go play at Alabama, but you might be able to play at John Tyler Community College. So there's always a level where you can fit. So we're just trying to find spots where these horses can fit. And I thought this horse just from his confirmation would fit well up in North Dakota. So we got him. We sent him up in North Dakota, and he's running up there. So those guys are still running horses over there as we speak.
That's cool.
Talking with trainer Mark Sims on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mark, tell us a little bit more about racing in North Dakota for people who have never been.
Yeah, so it's cheaper racing for sure, but horses are horses. Up there, you get horses a lot of times that couldn't make it on some of the bigger circuits. So sometimes it's confirmation things, or they have little issues here and there. So training in general is a little bit different. We train a lot harder here in Kentucky and probably around the world than we do up there, just because those horses, a lot of times they're older, and older horses are usually, I mean, they get themselves relatively fit. So we do things like ponying horses a lot more than you'll see down here. Horses get a lot more time off. So the winters, I mean, it's extremely cold up there, so most of the winters are spent in the barn, or maybe they get out to the corral for a couple hours. And then in the springtime, when the racetrack thaws out, usually around April or so is when guys kind of start getting back to the racetrack, start trying to get them fit. And then they usually run, in North Dakota, they'll run June and July. In South Dakota, they start up a little bit earlier, so May. And then after the North Dakota meet's over, they still run up in Winnipeg. It's called Assiniboia Downs. It's in Manitoba. So anybody who's got some horses, the pots are a little bit better up there. So anybody that's got horses that's been running well or still fit and they still want to go, they'll usually ship up north to Canada to run. But it's been around for a while. I got an old news article that they wrote about my grandpa. He actually helped establish horse racing in North Dakota, and he'd go to South Dakota and Nebraska and stuff when he was younger, and was kind of disheartened that they didn't have racing back in North Dakota, paramutual racing. But he was one of the guys who really fought for that, and they were able to bring it back. And they've been going ever since.
Is that the North Dakota Horse Park in Fargo? Is that the main racetrack in North Dakota?
So they have Chippewa Downs, which is actually on our Indian reservation, Turtle Mountain Indian Reservation in Belfort. And then they have North Dakota Horse Park, which I want to say is about 10 or 12 years old, and that's where they run. So I think usually North Dakota may get, maybe not that many, maybe they have 8 or 9 weekends of racing, and they'll split that racing between Fargo and Belfort. Usually starts off over in Belfort. They'll get 4 or 5 weeks, and then they'll swing over to Fargo for the next 3 or 4 weeks. And that's kind of their meet.
Racing used to be very popular in that area for a long period of time, but it seems like a lot of those tracks have gone by the wayside.
Yeah, there's been a ton of them in there. Somebody might correct me, but I think North Dakota Horse Park didn't run for a year or two, and I'm not 100% sure why, but I know just kind of in general, trying to get a younger fan base and stuff is tough right now. Trying to get folks to the races is tough. My grandpa, kind of a cool story, too. He tells stories about how when he used to run in South Dakota when he was younger, he'd be running over there with, like, Bill Mott and stuff. So there's a lot of old horsemen from that area. I think Asmussen's from that way. So there's some good horsemen down there. It's just a lot of them don't have the stock that we have up here.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about Bill Mott, because when he was on this program, he spent about half the show talking about his hometown of Mobridge, South Dakota. Did you follow his career very much, Mark, or did you try to get reach out to him and meet him at some point here over the past few years?
Yeah, so funny, I actually reached out, because I don't think Bill's super interactive on the internet, but I was in Afghanistan, I reached out to his son, Riley. Just kind of told him my story, and I was from that way, and I was looking to kind of get going once I got back from Afghanistan, training horses here in Kentucky. And I reached out to a bunch of trainers, and Riley reached back, and I actually went over and kind of met Bill, and we chatted for a few. But by that time, after I actually met him, I had already kind of started with Dale. But I would think it's cool listening to trainer talk and kind of hearing how those guys grew up and kind of got their operation up off the ground.
So you would spend time when you were in Afghanistan listening to our shows on your downtime?
Yeah, that, and I was always trying to watching Blood Horse. So we were about, I think, 12 or 13 hour difference. So it was when we were getting ready to try to go to bed, if the Wi-Fi was working, which didn't happen all the time, I'd be trying to pull up shows, just trying to stay as connected as possible to the sport, because I knew I wasn't there, so I didn't want to get behind any of my peers. So I figured, I spent a ton of time reading and just trying to stay up on medicine, on breeding, just really everything going on with the game.
You notice how he listened to us right before he went to bed so he could fall asleep?
Very, very good. Especially if you're in Afghanistan. I imagine some nights pretty hard to fall asleep, but just tune in. That's a good way to do it.
Tune in and tune out.
Who is tougher to work for, the United States Army in Afghanistan or Dale Romans at Churchill Downs?
The Army for sure. No, Dale's a good guy. Army for sure.
What rank would Dale be if he was in the Army? Where would you rate him?
Probably maybe a PFC, a private first class. No, I'm just joking. I had to say that because somebody asked Dale. I always bring a bunch of people in for Derby, my buddies and stuff that I was with either in the Army or went to high school or college together. And one of them was in the Navy. So he asked Dale, he was like, "Hey, Dale, what would Mark's rank be out here?" And he'd be like, "He's a private, kind of like Gomer Powell." So I had to get back at him a little bit.
I could see Dale being a sergeant, like yelling orders at everybody.
Mark Sims, now training at Churchill Downs. He is our guest here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. If you couldn't tell by the first 15 or 20 minutes of this program, his journey has been anything other than traditional to get to this point in his career. Mark, we're going to talk more about the military side of things in a moment, but you mentioned both your parents were military, so you moved around often as a child, which is typical for most military families. You would return to the reservation during school breaks, but then you moved to Virginia to attend high school and then college. Tell us about those years.
Yeah, so my dad kind of made the vow to us. Once we got to high school, he wasn't going to jerk us around. I mean, it's tough moving around every couple of years. So once we got to Virginia, that was high school. So he was like, "Hey, we're going to stay here for a while." And what was kind of cool back then, Colonial Downs was still going. So I'd get out there as much as possible. And I'll tell you, everywhere we moved, my parents kind of supported me and with the horses. So it may have not been race horses, but trying to get around horses in some capacity. I can remember we lived in Greenville, Illinois for a little while, and they had an old fair. And there was a couple old standard bred trainers out there. And I can remember my mom taking me out there early in the morning. I forget what the old guy's name was, but he'd let me pet his horses. And sometimes he'd let me jump in the, what do they call that, a sulky or silky?
The sulky.
The actual buggy. Yeah, the sulky. He'd let me get in there with him and take his horses out. So that was always fun. And then in Virginia, in high school and then in college, there was a farm out there called Guide a Dream Farm. And I kind of reached out to them just like, "Hey, this is kind of my background. I just want to be around horses." They were like, "Hey, come on out." So it was kind of cool. They had like dressage horses and what are those? 4-H. They had a bunch of 4-H horses. So I'd go out there And just to be around and be connected and work with horses and really, I mean, when the vet would come out, I'd spend a lot of time kind of picking his brain and just trying to learn as much as possible. But to be completely honest, I didn't really know. I knew I wanted to train horses, but I didn't really know, being in Virginia, how I was going to get here and how it was all going to come together. So right after high school, I was an athlete in high school, and I ended up going to Virginia State University, which is an HBCU right outside of Petersburg, Virginia, or inside of Petersburg, Virginia. And one thing that also interested me was criminal justice. And my dad, he worked for he was in the Army Reserves after he got out active duty and worked for the Federal Bureau of Prisons. So I was kind of interested in that as well. So I decided to major in criminal justice and animal science. So if horse racing didn't work out, I had a backup plan. And I also decided to do ROTC. So I had done JROTC in high school, and my parents being in the military, I always thought that was kind of cool, the discipline and walking around with a uniform. I didn't have to actually pick out clothes one day a week. So I did that in college, and then right after ROTC, ROTC gave me a full ride. But the thing with ROTC is you got a commission in the Army. So I was like, hey, that'll be kind of cool. I get a free ride to school. I ran track as well, so I actually got to make a little bit of money with that scholarship. But I didn't have to worry about how I was going to pay my college loans back because it was already paid for. And then all my buddies who were looking for jobs, I was like, well, at least I got a job right out of school. So Virginia State was awesome. I actually learned a ton, really enjoyed it, but wasn't 100% sure what I wanted to do, if I wanted to be full-time military or kind of my plan there. So I sat down with an old mentor of mine, a colonel in the Army, and he told me, Mark, you should look into the FBI. So I actually got to go on a tour of the FBI Academy. And I asked them what I needed to do to be a special agent. And they said, you need to be an intelligence officer, and you need to go to Korea, and then you need to go to Afghanistan. So that's what I chose to do. But then right when I was getting ready to leave Korea, we got to pick a duty station, kind of where you want to go. And I was looking for a unit that was going to deploy to Afghanistan because I wanted to go and also try to get close to horses. And it just so happened that there was an infantry brigade right here at Fort Knox, Kentucky. So I was getting ready to go to Afghanistan, and I knew it was going to be close to horses, but I didn't realize how close it was to Churchill. So I got assigned here, and that's how I kind of got connected to Kentucky.
Well, that's a circuitous way of getting there, but it worked out great because I imagine that's how you hooked up with Dale.
Yeah, so it was kind of cool. I can remember like yesterday, the day they sent me it's called an RFO, a request for orders, saying that I was coming to Fort Knox, Kentucky. I was ecstatic. So what I did was I just reached out to a bunch of trainers, kind of telling them my story, like, hey, I'm looking to get back into horses. I'd love to just come out and help and learn. And Dale had a lady named Terry Hendrickson who was kind of doing his books and doing his internet stuff. Her son was in the 82nd Airborne Division, so she kind of had a soft spot for soldiers. And she was like, hey, you should come out and come check it out. And as soon as I got here, like the first thing I did was drive up to Oldham County, Goshen, Kentucky. He had a training center out there, or he still does. And it was about an hour from Fort Knox, and I met the guy who runs that. His name's Nelson Fabian. We became friends right away. And I started coming up here every morning. So I would get up at like 3 in the morning, drive to Goshen, walk horses, groom horses, put saddles on, clean stalls, whatever needed to be done, take a quick shower, drive back down to Fort Knox and work. And I did that through the winter, so probably about 2 or 3 months before Dale and the rest of the team came back from Florida. And once they got back from Florida, Dale and I met and really just started helping out around the barn. And then I went to Afghanistan kind of in the middle there right after the Derby. And when I got back from Afghanistan, I was kind of dead set that horses were the route I wanted to go. So I kind of started off just kind of helping out, and then I got my assistant's license and kind of kept going from there. Dale and his team were extremely welcoming. Dale and his main assistant, a guy named Baltimore, and we're all really, really good friends. I mean, I've learned a ton from him and his staff. I kind of knew how to train a horse, just being in North Dakota, like just from a basic horsemanship. But I didn't really know how to train this quality of horse. So it was really cool to be around and see grade one horses and why they were grade one, and just really see real athletes. So it was awesome. It was a great school.
Mark Sims here on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton. Mark, less than 3 minutes or so before we have to get to our break at the bottom of the hour here, but I want to go back to something you said a minute ago about being in Korea and then in Afghanistan. You talked earlier about watching or listening to our podcast and reading Blood Horse. How were you able, outside of that, how were you able to stay close to racing when you were in Korea and in Afghanistan?
So Afghanistan was tough. They didn't have a bunch of horse racing. But Korea, they do have horse racing. They got a couple of different racetracks. So it was kind of cool. I actually got in trouble for it once, but over in Korea, all males have to do like 2 years of service, whether it's in the army or you're a police officer or something, some kind of community service. And the guys who can speak English well and they make good grades, they get an opportunity to join a program called a KATUSA program, a Korean augmentee to the U.S. Army. So instead of being in the ROK Army, they work with U.S. soldiers for 2 years. So we had a KATUSA who worked for us. So I told him, I was like, hey, you ever been at a horse track? And he was like, no, but I know where it's at. So I was like, all right, how about this? You take me to the horse track, and then I'll take you to Chili's. They had an Air Force base that had Chili's. And a lot of those guys over there love American food. I said, I'll take you to Chili's, get you a beer, and we'll do dinner. He was like, okay, no problem, sir. I said, all right, cool. So we go on weekends to Seoul American Race Course, I think it's called. And between him and I, we translate the program. We bet horses, watch the horses. And it was a lot of fun to just kind of – it was different, kind of different style racing. I think the grass course over there was on the outside. The dirt was on the inside. It was cold. Like, they weighed the horses. The way the riders rode was different. But it was still horse racing, so it still kind of got my fix there. And then I still spent a lot of time reading and really trying to stay up on what was going on in the sport. So that's how we did it over in Korea.
Yeah, that's a great story. Mark Sims, our special guest on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton. Stay with us. Much more to come, including exactly what he learned from Dale Romans and a look back on some of the top horses he had the privilege to be around when he was working with Dale. That's all ahead on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton here on HRN. Stay with us. On November 4th, let your stars shine their brightest under the Phasic Tipton November Sale Spotlight. Poised to attract the bids of the world's leading buyers, no other sale packs as much thrill and excitement into one single session. The November sale was stronger than ever in 2017, with record gains, as sellers realized top prices for their prized fillies, broodmares, and weanlings. Nominate now, the Phasic Tipton November Sale, November 4th in Lexington, Kentucky. Learn more at phasicnovember.com.
Bloom Racing.
Sky Diamonds takes the lead. Sky Diamonds to win, going away.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Midnight Bizou with another assertive final furlong. The top filly of the meet deservedly wins the Grade 1 Santa Anita Oaks.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
It all started with a dream. A dream to be the best. To breed the best. To race the best.
Super Saver Russell Mayan, what a finish to the class.
And to stand the best. Windstar Farm. Dedicated to the dream.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
American Pharaoh has lost the lead at the top of the stretch. Frosted on the outside is now in front, but American Pharaoh is battling on from the inside. He's showing all this fight with 1 furlong to run. And here on the far outside comes Keen Ice with a late threat. American Pharaoh put away Frosted. He has to deal with Keen Ice. Keen Ice has got him. Keen Ice has won the Travers over American Pharaoh in a dramatic upset. Frosted was third and Upstart was fourth. And a final time of 201.57 seconds. The Graveyard of Champions has claimed another.
Welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton here on HRRN. Mike Penna, Jude Feld, Baron and Pontiff, together in our Jimmy Johns of Lexington broadcast studios. Happy to have you back with us. Larry Colmus with the call of that memorable Travers Stakes. Triple Crown winner American Pharaoh going down to defeat at the Graveyard of Champions and doing it at the hands of Keen Ice, who was trained by Dale Romans. And tonight's guest, Mark Sims, a former assistant to Dale, now training on his own. And you're going to hear more here in the second half of the program from Mark. But before we get to that point, want to remind you that if you missed any portion of this show or any of our Trainer Talk shows, pretty simple. All you have to do is head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. Check out the podcast of this program and all of our shows at horseracingradio.net. And remember to follow us at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. Well, Mark, I know that moment at Saratoga stands out to you. You were around Keen Ice working with Dale. Had to be kind of neat to see him pull off that shocker in the Travers.
You know, I'm still surprised to this day that my wife and I didn't get kicked out of our apartment when when he won that race. He ran huge. I can remember turning for home and I seen American Pharaoh and Frosted on the front end kind of battling out, but I seen Keen Ice and Javier kind of getting things going. So we were yelling all the way home, and when he got there, I mean, we were yelling, jumping, acting a fool. I think I called Baltimore right away. If I recall correctly, Baltimore was driving back from Ellis, so he didn't see the race. So when I told him, he was like, "We won the race! We won the race!" So he was all excited. But it was awesome, definitely a great feeling. And it was fun to kind of follow him around and kind of be there on the racetrack when American Pharaoh won the Derby and then when he won. We were here at Keeneland. We had Keen Ice in there again for the Breeders' Cup and kind of being there firsthand for the first Triple Crown winner. What was it, 42 years?
Yeah, yes, he had to go back to 78, so yeah. 47 years, right? 47 years.
47, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's right, if my math is correct. But pretty special moment. And you had mentioned, I read an article as I was getting ready for the show, that Keen Ice was kind of just a big kid, and then you watched him mature into this really, really top racehorse.
Yeah, so he was really cool because I can remember like yesterday him showing up and kind of being in the first stall. And in the mornings, he wouldn't go in the first set. So he'd be kind of standing up against the wall, pawing and all excited to kind of get going. He was kind of chunky. Baltimore would kind of use the analogy, we need a lot of sweaty saddle towels. We need a horse to kind of get fit, and he's got to do a lot of jogging, a lot of galloping before he's ready to go. And I'm sure he did fill up his fair share of wet saddle towels. But watching him kind of grow up and then break his maiden, if I recall correctly, he broke his maiden over here at Churchill in a dead heat. So it wasn't super, super impressive, but he was just a horse that grinded and tried hard. And it was cool to see him win the Travers, but it really all came to fruition this March. I got my first couple of horses. I went up to Calumet to get him, and I showed up, I think it was February or March, early in the morning, and I ended up in the Stallion Barn, and he was there to meet me. He was right there. Getting ready to go get a mare, but it was kind of cool to see him because he was there when I kind of first came around the races here in Kentucky. And then as I step out on my own, I get to see an old pal and pat him on the head.
It's great to have a relationship with horses like that when they recognize you and are happy that you showed up to see them. That doesn't happen all the time.
Yeah, for sure. A lot of folks, especially away from the industry, have no clue that each of these horses have a personality, and they're smart. I heard somebody say that they were smart as a 3-year-old, and I would probably agree with that because I got a 3.5-year-old running around. But they're sharp. They know what they can get away with. They know who they can push around. It's fun. I really enjoy kind of watching them grow. I think that's the part that excites me the most, that I really get kind of the biggest kick out of. Watch them come in like Keen Ice did, or Free Drop Billy, all those horses when they came in. Just being a young horse and everybody around the barn kind of trying to pick who's their favorite and who's going to be the big one. And then watching them as they grow and really mature and become classy individuals.
I love it when people say, how do you tell them apart?
Oh, man.
That just cracks me up. I mean, it's like, can you tell your kids apart? You know, I mean, it's amazing that people don't, they just look at them as horses, I guess, and not as individuals.
Yep, for sure. I agree 100%. I mean, there was, 60, 70, 80 horses going around, and I could look at them, and I mean, you know who's who, because you're looking at them every morning. You're looking at them in the stall. You're looking at them on the racetrack. You're connected to them. So it's very easy to differentiate if you really kind of put a little effort into it.
Trainer Mark Sims with us on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. By the way, just for the record, I wasn't a math major. 37 years from a firm to American Pharoah was that gap when Pharoah pulled it off.
I was trying to remember what Larry Colmus said.
The 37-year wait is over.
That is what he said.
But I try to forget most of the things Larry Colmus said. So.
Well, Mark, if you could put your finger on the number one thing that Dale taught you that you're using today with your operation as you get started. Most important thing, the number one thing, what is it?
No question about it. It's you got to have a team. There is a team involved in everybody tied to the racetrack industry understands it, but there's a lot of folks who are kind of behind the scenes that don't get credit from the breeders to the blacksmith, to the veterinarian, to the hot walker, gallop riders, everybody, foremen's assistants. It's a team effort. And that's with everything. I think in the military it takes a team, but if you're going to have a successful organization, you need a good team. Dale's operation, whether he's in Saratoga or wherever he's at, is still going to be run the same way because he's assembled just an awesome team. Guys who know what the expectation is, what the standard is. You can show up on any day, on any racetrack, and know that things are going to be taken care of. Anybody from the van driver, everybody, they all know what the expectation is, and it's clear. And so that's the big one, trying to assemble a good team. And I actually got kind of lucky trying to get going here. Just had a couple horses, and I had a hot walker. She had worked for Dale. And Dale was still in Florida, so she was kind of here hanging out. Her name is Brianna. She goes to U of L and was on that equine business program over there. So she came out and started helping me, and then Dale was on the way back, so she was going to go over there. And she hooked me up with one of her friends who's also in the program, and she helped me out. But then she had finals, so she had to go. So she was like, hey, my boyfriend, he used to be a foreman for Joe Sharp and works for Maker and Dorochenko. He'll come. So I was like, all right, cool. I really just need somebody to kind of be around. And he showed up. His name's Nestor. And he showed up in May, and he's been with me since. But it's been awesome having him around because if for some reason I can't be here or something's going on, he knows exactly what to do. If he needs to jump in a stall, I mean, whatever's going on. If I'm out with one and something's going on in the barn, he knows exactly what to do. So really trying to assemble that team now. I got the same farrier, same vet as Dale does, same van driver. So, assembling that team is definitely the big one that I take away from Dale.
What's the biggest challenge facing you right now getting started with your career?
I think it's really just exposure. You got to win some races to let folks know, like, hey, you can do it on your own. So I think that's the toughest one. So from an exposure standpoint, we'll be out at the sales. I want to try to buy a couple, but from a networking perspective, just kind of being out there talking to folks. A lot of folks, I've had a chance really with Dale. Dale never shied away from the chance to tell my story. All of his owners, would stop mid-conversation if I came up and kind of say, hey, this is my man. Dale calls me Chief from being from the reservation.
So typical.
Politically correct and everything. Just right down the middle, Dale.
You know, he is extremely politically correct, old Mr. Romans. But he'd always tell my story and let folks know, like, hey, this is kind of his story. This is where he's from. So folks knew who I was. So now really just trying to get folks to send a few horses this way and see if we can get this thing rolling.
But Dale is tremendously loyal. He's just unbelievable as far as that's concerned, especially in the thoroughbred business. I don't think you could find somebody more loyal than Dale Romans. But that's such a good quality to have, to have enough confidence in yourself that you're not afraid to introduce your assistant to your clients for fear that you're going to lose your horses. You know, I mean, Dale's just an upstanding guy, and that's really great that he did that for you.
No, there's no question about it. One thing I've always appreciated and respected about Dale is he'll tell you how he feels. And either he likes you or he doesn't. And he's honest about it. He's not a guy who's going to kind of talk one way in front of you and talk another way in front of somebody else. He's going to tell you what he feels and kind of his thoughts on his outlook on things. And if you disagree, you can have a conversation. He's a good guy.
You know, Mark, if you really get this thing rolling and become a big success, you're going to have to come up with a new nickname. There is only one trainer in the history of racing that can be known as the Chief. You know this, yeah. Right?
I know. Hey, Mike, it's not if, it's when.
That's right. Yeah, well put. Yeah, and talking with Mark Sims on Trainer Talk here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. You have a website, which is something we see from a lot of the younger up-and-coming trainers in the sport. They're taking to social media. They're taking to the internet to promote themselves and let people know about their operation. And if people go to Sims, that's two M's, Sims JR Racing, that's SimsJuniorRacing.com, you can check out Mark's website. But you explain your mission and your methods and your training on that website, and people can read your bio. But one thing I noticed that when you talk about your methods, you talk about training each horse as an individual. And that's something we hear a lot from trainers that are successful. Talk a little bit about your philosophy.
Yeah, so just like athletes, so I think one thing that kind of helps here in this sport too is I was a track athlete. So I do understand and being around a lot of coaches and stuff when I was younger, everybody doesn't tick the same way. Everybody doesn't get motivated the same way. You can't train every person the same way. Everybody has to have kind of an individual plan, and we try to do the same thing here with the horses. I think I kind of have an overview of kind of what I think we should be doing, but if one day a horse has a little bit of swelling, or maybe he didn't eat up all his feed, or maybe he's standing a little funny in the stall or in the back of the stall or something, we're definitely all about adjusting on the fly. There's been a many a morning I sent a horse to the racetrack and got to the chute, and the rider comes by and I look at the racetrack or just get a funny feeling, and instead of maybe galloping two rounds, we jog two rounds, or vice versa. Or maybe the horse comes out and he's bucking on playing. I was like, man, we need to get this horse to the racetrack today. So really just trying to treat them as individuals. Same thing kind of with feed. I got one horse over here. His name's Country Fast. And he'll eat up, whatever you put in front of him. And when we got him, he was a little bit heavy. So for him, we cut back his feed a little bit to try to make him start looking like a racehorse. And we try to train up his training a little bit to make sure he was kind of getting the most out of it. And now he's super fit and ready to roll. Then I got another horse who's a little bit lighter frame. So we give him a little bit more and we train him a little bit lighter. So really just trying to make sure we adapt to each and every horse, kind of the same way my coaches adapted to each and every athlete when I was in college.
Yeah, the original chief, he was quite a tinkerer with horses, and he'd change little things sometimes on a daily basis until he felt like he got it exactly right. And and that's a lot of times that's what you do. And there's nothing wrong with making a last minute decision. You see all these Hall of Fame guys like Bob Baffert, they do it at the drop of a hat. I can't tell you how many times I've seen Baffert have one plan in his head and he goes to the track and he decides to do something else. That's why he likes those walkie talkies so much. Drives the exercise riders crazy, but he loves them.
You know, I think with anything, you got to remain flexible. You can't get too rigid. And just kind of be willing to adjust and kind of switch up the plan if the weather doesn't cooperate or for some reason the horse looks a little funny. I look at horse training kind of like being a coach in college or just being a coach in general. Just your athletes can't talk to you. I say that, but they actually can talk to you. And I'm sure you guys know, you running horses and stuff, they talk to you. Once you really understand your horses and kind of get their quirks, you can tell when something ain't right that day or something's bothering them, or if they're feeling super good. Maybe they come out of a race and the next day they feel awesome, so we go back to the racetrack and jog or just do something. But it's always cool. They will talk to you if you're willing to listen.
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes, you know, you see people nowadays, everybody runs a horse once a month or once every 2 months, but you'll see somebody run a horse back in 6 days or 7 days or 10 days, and then everybody's going, oh, he's coming back too quick, you know. Well, if you've been around that horse and he's knocking the water buckets off the stall doors as he's walking around the shed row, you might as well run him back because he's good right now, right? You got to run him when they're good. So a lot of times people don't know that. They want to pigeonhole the horse, you know.
Yep, no question about it. And I definitely never question somebody's methodology or if they should run it back, because I don't have the horse and they know the horse better than I do, for sure. But then if you go back, like we talked about North Dakota a little bit earlier, the meet's condensed and those horses get the whole summer off or the whole winter off. So a lot of times you will see horses kind of come back the next week. There's horses that can handle it. There's some horses that need a month, 2 months between races. But there's some horses that can bounce back, and maybe they can bounce back a week between this race and then the next race. They're a little bit tired, so you got to give them a little bit of time. But if you're listening, they'll let you know when they're ready.
Mark, you mentioned being an athlete and competing at a pretty high level. Like most competitive athletes, I'm sure that you have that fire and that will to win and probably hate to lose as much as anybody. So when you're training horses, you're not going to win every race. And you look at your resume in this very young career. You've started 19 horses to date. You've won with two. That's pretty good. You have a second, and you have five thirds. Tell me about dealing with the losses as an athlete and somebody who wants to win so badly. How difficult can that be?
Well, I'll tell you. I'd probably tell you one thing. My wife would tell you another thing. I like to say, oh, it is what it is. It's part of the game. But it's tough. I got a little brother. He's actually a captain in the Army down at Fort Eustis, Virginia, and we grew up a year and a half apart. So we've been extremely competitive our whole lives. And everything I do, whether it's, I don't know, cutting the grass or whatever, the lawn at my house, I want to have the best, and I want to be the best. So losing is always tough. Seconds and thirds are tough. I want to win. I want to get my picture taken, especially when the rest of the owners come out and everybody wants to get it done. It makes it tough, but it's part of the game. And I think it's tough right after the race. But when I get back to the barn, I see them cooling out well and everything looks good. Then I kind of bounce right back and say, hey, now we can come back and we can go fight another day. But those, I try to tell my wife, hey, 5 minutes after a loss, just let me kind of soak it in for a few, and and then we try to regroup and make sure the horse is good for sure.
Mrs. LaCroix, David LaCroix's mom, told me one time she preferred running third to second, because when you run third, you can't say you could have won, but the money's almost as good. I thought that was a great bit of advice. And then the other one was Charlie Whittingham always said, the seconds turn into wins. So if you run second, don't be discouraged because the wind's right around the corner. And that's proven to be true lots of times too. So if that helps you, then that'll be good down the road.
One of my owners the other day, he said, we're getting ready to run. He said, Mark, what do you think? I said, well, two things can happen. We can win or we can lose. And then I walked away.
Yeah, it's that simple, though, really. There's winning and there's losing. And you know, if you're not first, then you're last for all intents and purposes, you know. And a lot of people will look at it that way, especially people that are competitive like you, Mark. Does your wife work with you?
No, my wife, so we actually just had our newborn son. She actually just went back to work, but she is a captain in the Army, but in the reserves. Her regular job, she actually just graduated from an accelerated nursing program here in Louisville, Bellarmine University. So she is a cardiac ICU nurse downtown here in Louisville. But what she can come out, she was 6-7 months pregnant trying to hot walk horses, and I was like, babe, get out of here. she loves the horses, loves being around them. And I think that's one thing I really, really kind of excites me each day is the family being so supportive. I got a little girl. She's 3 and a half. She'll get on the pony with me and ride around the barn. And I told her, I was like, babe, we might have to sell this one. I mean, she busted out crying. She doesn't want to get rid of any horses. She just she loves it. She comes in every day, grabs peppermints, and goes down the shed row. It kind of scares me because she has no fear. But just being able to share my passion with my family is awesome.
Yeah, nothing like it. My kids are all grown, but they still talk about the racetrack, and whenever they have a chance to go out, they do, and come visit and hang out on the farm or whatever. It's just something that they love, and they've loved it since they were little. They used to be like you, wake up early in the morning and say, you know, I want to go to the barn. And well, if you're ready at 4, we'll go, because that's when I'm leaving.
Yep. You know? Yep, I'm the same way.
Yeah,
my wife's little brother, I drag him out of bed to get him up here, and he enjoys it once he's up and rolling. But getting out of bed is always tough. My buddies kind of give me a hard time for going to bed so early. Or if they want to go hang out and have a couple of beers, I'll say, hey, I got no problem with that. But we got to start around 5 because 4 o'clock comes early, and I'm not messing around with you guys all night.
That's right.
How many horses do you have now, Mark?
2, and should be getting a third one here in the next couple of weeks. I got an empty stall waiting on them. And then hopefully, really like to pick up a couple. In the next couple of weeks, I've been chatting with a couple of folks who's talked about sending horses. So hopefully we can get a couple more here pretty soon.
Yeah, what's your ideal number? Do you have a number in your head?
You know, I don't. I'd like to have – I want to have an operation and kind of build it out. I don't know what that number is, but I think 40 or 50. I'd love to kind of have – something built out where I can kind of float around and have a couple, be able to run on several different circuits. You look at some of the bigger operations, they can have a lot of success because if a horse can't make it on one circuit, they can go to another circuit. So I'd love to have something like that and make sure we can find spots for each horse and make sure that they're competitive where they are. And then horses who are good somewhere, maybe move them up to another string and have some flexibility there. Is really where I'd like to be.
Yeah, kind of like having a farm team, huh?
Yeah, just like that. But you look at, I mean, there's a lot of operations. I think like Steve Ashman and stuff where he's able to kind of shift horses around kind of where they belong and where they're going to be competitive, where they can win. I think that's key. I kind of touched on it earlier, but I think every horse can win somewhere. It's just making sure that you can get them to where they can win. I'd love to have horses that can win at Saratoga and Keeneland all the time and Delmar, but we don't have them just yet.
Well, Mark Sims, by the way, our special guest on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Just a few minutes left. This hour has really gone by quickly. It's been a delight to hear your story. we always like to kind of wrap it up by asking trainers to let us know something about them outside of racing that people might not know. So I'm going to go out on a limb and say that maybe you're still a sports guy, considering how you competed in so many sports in college and even overseas.
Yeah, so I'm a huge Minnesota Vikings fan, and that's really the only – I love watching sports, but that's the only team I can get tied to because they break my heart. Between the horses and the Minnesota Vikings, I'm a heartbroken guy.
Yeah, last year was brutal for you, huh?
I know. And then a couple years before that, we threw an interception when we should have scored. So we find a way to I can take it, even in horse racing. If you know the horse doesn't break good and you're at the back, you're like, all right, we didn't win this one. But the Vikings like to make you think we got a shot and then kill your dreams. So
hey, it can always be worse. You could be a Cleveland Browns fan.
Well, even if you're a Cleveland Browns fan, you kind of know what's coming. you know what's coming. The Vikings, the worst part is they get my hopes up.
Yeah, I can imagine it has to be a little difficult with you training on Sundays, especially if you're running a horse and then the Vikings are playing, you know, trying to kind of coordinate how you're going to watch the game.
So what's cool about that is they had the Horseman's Lounge at Churchill. A lot of times they'll have games on there. And then there's a little bar across the street, Beefle Brady's. So if I got time, I may try to sneak over there and watch a snap or two. but we definitely. And then I guess with cell phones now, I can watch it on my phone. But I usually get pretty dialed in and try to get into the zone before the races. So if I'm prioritizing, it's definitely the horses over football.
There you go. You know your priorities.
Yeah, yeah. Mark Sims Jr. here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fazit Tipton. Mark, it has been a delight to hear your story. It's been a lot of fun. And once again, let us say it. We can't say it enough. Thank you so much for serving our country and for doing what you've done for this great country of ours. Thank you.
Hey, guys, I really appreciate the time. I really enjoyed it. And I thank you.
Yeah, and good luck moving forward. We'll be cheering for you, Mark.
Thanks, guys. You guys have a great rest of the week. Appreciate it.
Yeah, you too. What a guy, huh?
Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah, I hope he gets a boatload of horses after people listen to this show.
Yeah, well, hopefully people will find his style refreshing and send him something.
Yeah, and obviously he comes from a pretty good school, the school of Dale Romans.
Yeah, well, that's true too.
Yeah, he knows what he's doing. Our thanks to Mark for taking the time to be with us on Trainer Talk here tonight. If you missed any portion, just head to our website, horseracingradio.net. Check out the podcast of this program and all of our shows. It's there for you at horseracingradio.net. Been fun, JT.
Yep. Great show.
For our producer, Lee Delapina, for Jude Feld, I'm Mike Penn, and we'll talk to you next time. Thanks for listening to Trainer Talk, presented by Fazek Tipton.